This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Good morning, thrilled to be here. Sorry I'm a little delayed, Mother Nature never loses. What I really want to do is actually pontificate a little bit. They've given me a time slot, and I decided as I was looking at the social mentions and just kind of the context of this event that a lot of people actually did have context for my spiel. Some have shared the stage with me, others have been engaging, and so I decided to actually cut my chatting down a little bit because the truth is, as a lot of you know, I'll put out my general thoughts on entrepreneurship and business on pretty much a daily basis. I thought what would be much more interesting is actually try to do as much Q&A as possible. So, because what I think is then I can answer your questions, and I find that even when I answer them very specifically, that takes care of 20 or 30% of the audience's questions. So I'll get into that in a little bit, but first I'll give you a little bit of a chat. You know, I've been thinking a lot lately about this whole journey, about how entrepreneurship has become something of a status and has been put on a pedestal. I've also been thinking about how scary it is when something becomes cool or interesting and what that creates. And I've been pondering that quite a bit, which is the differences between being an entrepreneur and being a successful entrepreneur. You know, putting the fact that you're a CEO in your Instagram profile doesn't mean that it's what you're gonna be able to do for the rest of your life. And what I'm really concerned about is that we have lived, both in Canada and the US, with basically an 8 to 9 year macro, almost a decade of good economic growth. We just have. You know, obviously there was a crash in the US in 2008 or 2009, but if you look at the data, we're probably on the tail end of economic growth. You know, obviously nobody knows, otherwise they would make trillions of dollars. But one of the things that I did want to talk to you guys about today is practicality. I think practicality is stunningly not talked about enough. So for example, if you're running a business right now and it's predicated on raising money, or you've raised money and you lose money each month, it's probably a really good idea to change course pretty quickly. Because the biggest issue for me right now is that we have a lot of people who want to build brands, who want to become influencers, who want to start companies, but they're not putting in the pieces that actually allow them to weather the storm. You know, the thing that I'm most proud of is the two biggest businesses I've ever built, I basically started them during very difficult times. When I first got involved in my dad's liquor store business, it was the late 90s, and just about a year and a half into my journey, I guess 2 years into my journey, the stock market crashed and all the internet companies folded, and all the people that were making money that I was targeting to sell wine stopped having money to buy wine. And then right behind that, because most of my business was New York and New Jersey based, even though we were building an internet company, it was only about a year later that 9/11 happened, and not only, you know, changed, I mean, for anybody that lived in the New York, New Jersey area, it was much more compounded for us because we lost loved ones, and I remember I lost 100 employees from one organization in one day. I had to go in hand by hand and take their emails out because everybody passed away from Cantor Fitzgerald that worked in that office. So I persevered through that because I was practical, because I didn't have a lot of overhead, and because I wasn't romantic, I wasn't dreaming. I knew that I had to buy and sell wine and liquor and beer, and I had to make sure that my expenses weren't greater than the money I was bringing in. VaynerMedia started in the ashes of the economic meltdown of the US. When I started VaynerMedia, people didn't want to pay $5,000, let alone the $50,000 or $100,000 they pay us a month now for our services. And when I started VaynerMedia, you know, it's funny, I watch everybody watch my journey now, and you know, there's that cliche thing of like overnight success, right? I'm gonna have this TV show come out this June, and it's gonna change my profile, right? I'm gonna sit on a stage with Will.i.am and Gwyneth Paltrow and Jessica Alba for this Apple show that I'm about to do, and everybody's gonna say, where'd he come from? That happened overnight, you know? And it's even really happened in social. I'm sure for a lot of you, you've only really even have known about me for the last 6 months or so, even though I've been putting out content online for 10 years every single day. And so the thing that I've been really thinking about is practicality. Like VaynerMedia, even though I had already built a nice sized business, it wasn't like I was extracting a lot of money out of Wine Library. And so when AJ and I started VaynerMedia 7 years ago, we started it out of a company called Buddy Media's conference room. For the first 2 years that I ran VaynerMedia, we had no rent. We first worked out of a conference room, We then worked out of a co-working space before the whole WeWork and co-working space revolution, and I bartered my time to help that company in exchange for a very small space. We didn't buy furniture, we scrapped. And I'd already made it, I was already rich, and we scrapped. And so the biggest thing that I want to implore everybody here today to do is to take a step back and think about how fancy are they. Are you willing to be really, really, really ghetto? Do you really need that chair? Do you really need that piece of technology? Do you really need to fly that class? Like, I just think that we're living through an incredibly fancy culture of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship and CEO status is quite sexy. People are selling a lifestyle that is filled with lots of fun and trips and champagne and bikinis and bling bling and all sorts of horse shit, right? And I just think that that era of this era is gonna come to an end somewhere within the next 5 years. And very honestly, I just don't want a lot of people in this room that dream to build their own businesses to have to go work at a bank or go work at a retail store. And so I would highly recommend something that I think is stunningly not talked about enough, which is if you're building a business, you have to be making money. And so, I know that's like a funny thing to say, but I think it's important. I think the other thing that's important is to shift the context completely the other way, which is what is really winning, right? Like, what is the definition of winning? And I think we all have different definitions, right? And I think that one of the things that I also want to say is that I'm getting scared that a lot of people that are following my journey hear me talking about buying the New York Jets, and I do aspire to buy a $3 billion sports franchise. I do, it is what I want. It's, you can look at my fifth grade yearbook long before business was cool. It's what I wanna do. But I'm awfully scared that it's pressuring the people that follow me into trying to achieve things that they don't necessarily want. They just think it's the thing you do if you're trying to be a successful business person. Let me promise you something. I know tens of thousands of people. I know thousands of people extremely well. I know hundreds of people deeply well. There is no correlation between how much money someone makes and their level of happiness. I have friends who make $47,000 a year and are the happiest people I know. Their work-life balance is on point, they're part of two soccer teams, they play video games, they watch every show they want, they take two vacations that they scrap together, and they're freaking happy as hell. And I know tons of people who I grew up with in the Silicon Valley boom who have hundreds of millions of dollars in their bank account and are as miserable and as lonely and as broken as you'll ever see. So I implore all of you to please reverse engineer and figure out who you are and figure out what level of monetizing and stuff you need and what level of creativity you need. I promise you one thing that will catch you very off guard. I should be way more rich. I leave money on the table every day. I've left ungodly amounts of money on the table. I spend tons of times sending DMs and engaging with people, meeting people randomly and not cashing in. I actually believe the statement I'm about to make. I think that I love the journey and the game of entrepreneurship so much that I have subconsciously sabotaged my financial upside to make sure I can play this a little longer because I fear if the numbers keep getting too big, eventually it will take the fun out of it. When you were lucky enough, like I am, to actually do something that you love so much, do something that puts pressure against the one thing you care about besides it, which is the time I spend with my family. My family is my whole life. And being this and doing this is the only thing that cuts into that. I couldn't breathe if I wasn't an entrepreneur. I didn't breathe when I wasn't an entrepreneur. That's the reason I got D's and F's in school, because I just couldn't be me. And I'm not capable of that. And so I think being here excites me because I think coming to not LA, San Francisco, New York, London is always more fun for me. It always feels a little more practical. It always feels like there's a little bit more chips on the shoulder, which is what I have. But I want to remind everybody, just because you didn't grow up with a trust fund, just because you don't live in Silicon Valley, the market doesn't care. If you're good enough, you will win. And I hope that you don't. It's true. And if you sit around and ponder, well, if I didn't live here, or if my mom wasn't an alcoholic, or if I just learned about this earlier, or if I'd been following this person earlier, or if I wasn't born a woman, or if I wasn't born a minority, if you sit and do that, you are losing. You're not wrong. It's just that business and marketing and all this doesn't care. There's just no emotion in the market. Like, that's it. And so I think we need to start having much deeper, much more serious conversations of practicality. You know, it's fun, and I love this space the most. But I loved it long before it was sexy. I loved it long before people wanted to take selfies with me. I loved it long before athletes and celebrities and rappers wanted to be entrepreneurs. I loved it long before that. It was my destiny. It was who I was. It was how I was wired. It was the only thing I knew. That's why the four-year-old me ripped flowers out of yards and sold it. You don't read about being an entrepreneur at 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. I didn't jump on this because it's cool now and it makes me money and girls. I did it because it's all I ever was. And I implore you, if you came here to be an entrepreneur, but this talk allows you to realize you're really an artist, or you're really a number three in a company because you bring this level of energy and you don't want to be a number one, because let me promise you something about being a number one. I'm not an entrepreneur, I'm a firefighter. My entire life is taking care of crap, putting out fires. 24/7, 365, my whole life is, this is a problem. Fix this, and guess what? When you're the last line of defense, there's no blaming your boss. There's no blaming the logo. There's no blaming the government. It's all my fault. All of it. And so, it's super sexy, but what's not being talked about is the friends and acquaintances I have who've committed suicide in the entrepreneur land the last 4 years, because nobody talks about the downside. Everybody thinks they're gonna be Zucks. Everybody thinks they're gonna build Snapchat. Go look at the data. The data shows that the far majority of this room will not succeed, not even close, to building an actual business. And I don't come here to be somber. I come here to remind you that there's only one thing you can do. The only thing you can do that can trump the moment mommy and daddy had sex to make you. The only thing that can trump that, the only thing that can trump your DNA, the only thing that is controllable, if you want it, if you want this, is work. It is. It's the only tangible, and by the way, I don't know if you guys have noticed, I've stopped even, and it's funny given the name of the conference, I've started using the word work more than the word hustle, just because I want everybody to understand what we're really talking about here. If you've got a big mouth, and a lot of you do here, search the hashtag, and a lot of you say CEO, founder, owner. I call that big mouth. If you've got the audacity to do it, and so many of you have heard this from me, when I audit you, and I do, because I'm curious, it's how I learn. People talk a big game. I especially love when somebody hits me up on social, like, Gary V, you're gonna buy the Jets, I'm gonna buy the Rams, you know? You know, everybody's buying a sports team. And I love to look at what that person does. And then I'll DM that person and be like, yo, bro, nobody, unless they were a trust fund baby, ever bought the Rams when they go skiing for a week when they're 24. nobody you know has become successful outside of it being given to them from their family. Nobody you know has actually created success without working their face off. It doesn't exist. So you can sit and talk about luck, and you can sit and talk about this, that, or the other thing, but I promise you, the only controllable thing you have is your work ethic. So, going back to the beginning of my talk, you need to deploy serious self-awareness and figure out who you are. I implore you to start matching your work ethic and your actions to your mouth. If you're gonna be a billionaire, you need to realize that most people that create $1 billion worth of wealth don't do anything besides work every single day of their 20s and 30s. All of them. Every person that works at VaynerMedia has taken more vacations in the last 13 months than I did in my entire 20s and early 30s. My family went on 2 family vacations my entire childhood. I was married to my wife for 5 years before we had a family. We took 2 vacations. It's the price you have to pay if you want it at the level that I want it at. And by the way, I advise nobody to want it at that level. I'm being dead serious. This is a very true statement that I think most of you will not believe, but I'm telling you it's the goddamn truth. If there was a drug that could take some ambition out, I would take it. It is so extreme. It is all in. The reason I started Daily V was to remind you that I'm outworking you. That when you talk and you're trying to figure it out, when you're trying to say you're gonna be like me, I want you to see it. I want you to see every other day, 5 a.m. I want you to see every day, midnight. All of them, every day, always, forever. That's what it takes for what I want. Good news is, between what I want and what is achievable and is considered unbelievably all-time happy is a big gap. So there's plenty of vacation time. I know tons of people with vacation time. I know tons of people with work-life balance. I know tons of people that do tons of fun activities and make 7-figure, millions of dollars a year and love it. I'm playing for legacy. I'm playing for all time. I'm looking to impact every generation that comes behind me because I want to show that you can build all-time wealth, all-time greatness, doing it the right way and the old way. That's what I'm up to. So please make sure you understand that, and more importantly, make sure you understand yourself so that you can reverse engineer that blueprint and figure out where you fit within that and then deploy it. But I promise you, you will not get there with your big idea. I promise you, sitting around and saying, oh, I had that idea for Uber before Uber did. Nobody gives a shit. I've got every idea that's gonna be successful over the next 100 years. It's all about AI and VR and AR and augmented and all this. I'll give them to you all. It doesn't matter, because most of you won't execute against it. The reason I put out all my best stuff and I'm liked and I don't charge for it is somewhere along the line I realized that 99.9% of you aren't gonna do anything about it. You're gonna ponder it. You're gonna get super pumped up when you watch me say it. And then 3 weeks later, you're gonna give up because you're not willing to pay the price. And that's cool. Everybody's different. But you need to figure out what price you are willing to pay for what you want. It has been insane to me how many people have emailed me in the last month about the 2017 Flip Challenge, which for you that don't know, was a video I made in December, which is, so many of you email me asking me for $5,000, and meanwhile, there's $5,000 worth of crap sitting in your house right now. Go grab it, post it on eBay, flip it, and make your money. How many people have flipped something since they saw that video? Raise your hands, just wanna say, higher, higher. Don't be shy. That's it. You know, like, it's insane. People emailing me like, hey, this, like, I just made $8,000 because I sold $100 of this, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. Funny thing happens when you actually work. Go figure. Funny thing happens when you actually realize it's money that gives you the opportunity. Everybody's got a big idea. Everybody's got the Uber of lawnmowers. Everybody's got the Airbnb of ice cream. It's not gonna happen. And if it does, please take the clip of this talk, email me, and say in the title, Gary V, you were wrong. And I will be the first to call you and say, Mazel Tov, I am so pumped. But I just want to remind every, especially 20 and 30 year old in this room, I came out the gate and I worked every day for 13 years before I said a goddamn word to anybody. I talk a whole lot now, and I've made up for those 13 years of silence. But I just want to remind everybody that I didn't make a video to the world about anything about business until I was 35 years old, after I worked every single day from the time I was 22 and in reality 14. And then I started talking. There's a whole lot of talking going on. How about more action? How about more execution? How about more paying prices for what your mouth is saying? That is what I hope you do. Thank you. That felt
hello,
good.
Hello, hello. Gary, thank you so much for coming here. We know it was a very tough road for you to get here today. This guy's a trooper, if you guys only knew. Yeah. Can we get another round of applause over here for Gary for making this a priority? This guy went through hell and high water to get here, and we are so thankful. So we're going to do a couple questions, as we told you. We have a bunch of questions from Twitter, so we'll start there. And then we're definitely going to come around to some audience questions. Okay, Gary.
Yes.
First question via Twitter.
Yes.
How important is it to take risks when you're starting a business?
I mean, you know, I think it comes down to your talent. So one of the things that I'm fascinated by is how many people are scared to take risks and then take credit for things. For example, let me explain. The amount of businesses that I've looked at over the last decade that are doing $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, $8 million in sales and are successful, and the founder is kind of making fun of other people for different things, and then I remind them that if I had run their business, instead of doing 2 million, it would be doing 19. They take a step back, and then I try to explain to them in detail, and here's where I'm getting at. Everybody's got their own cadence and their own talent, but taking risks is how you make real things happen. It's how you take quantum leaps. The amount of things I failed at VaynerMedia, from an agenda standpoint, over the last 7 years is enormous, because I take micro risks all the time. Risks that if they go to zero, which is how I think about them, will not put me out of business. But risks, for example, took a lot of risks last year. Last year we did $100 million in revenue. The year before we did 67. We made the same amount of money in both years. Risks. Lost $33 million of profit against that gross, you know, probably left $6, $7 million in profit on the table because I took risks. The good news is one of those risks is probably gonna make me 50 more in revenue in 3 years. So I think risks are imperative, and I wanna remind the people here who are conservative, you know, that's great. And if you're at the number that you wanna be at, great. The one thing I would say is the biggest fear I have for people that don't take risks is that your competitors might, and then you're in trouble. So a lot of people think it's insular, but it's not. Maybe the person that owned the most cab medallions in New York should have taken a risk and built a cab app.
True, very true.
Maybe the Hilton, right? Maybe the Westin, maybe Four Seasons should have taken a risk and created a platform where we rent each other our own rooms.
So, but,
you know, so risks are important.
On that note, though, just to follow up, do you think that larger companies are more adverse to risk?
100%. And I think small companies are scared of risk. I think people are scared. I think people lack self-esteem.
You're helping that situation, let me tell you.
I'm trying.
Okay. So that question, just to give a shout out, that question was from Wojactor, DJ Wojactor. And our next Twitter question, well, am I saying that right?
No, no, okay. He might not be here.
Oh, well,
Twitter's open
he...
to everyone.
Well, this... You are right, you are right. We did put out the hashtag this morning, though. It's our own, it's our HH Ask Gary V hashtag.
Thank
so hopefully he is here, or she, or whatever, heard that question. Our next one from Blair Kennedy. Will you ever open a VaynerMedia office in Canada?
Yes.
Really? Okay. So let us know when that's happening and we'll help you guys apply.
I promise you'll know.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, let's go to an audience question. Oh my goodness, how am I gonna decide?
Who's got the mic?
We have a mic? Okay, good, you're not leaving it up to me.
Yep, pick anyone. I'm gonna hang as long as I can. I'll answer as many as I can. Just give me your name.
Pedro.
Pedro,
hi.
What's up,
yeah,
brother?
I'm fucking so nervous right now. Okay. I just wanna say,
stand up.
Gary. You changed my life.
I promise most people didn't think that I'd be the second person to drop an F-bomb today. Go ahead, Pedro.
Thank you. So you changed my life. Just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you.
I'm an advertising student, and I sit in class. I'm in second year. I'm so nervous. I sit in class, and I...
They teach you crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I learn more from you. So I want to give you value.
Okay.
But I want an internship as well.
Okay.
So... if I can flip for you on stage, could you offer me an internship?
No.
No worries.
A flip?
Yeah.
Do you think you flipping was enough value for me?
I think it's entertainment for you.
Not for me. You don't know me super well.
All right, no worries. I'll accept that punch in the face.
Let me tell you why I told you no, and let me tell you where I want to go with it. I wrote a book called Jab, 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 Right Hook.
Yeah.
I'm about to teach you more. About to teach you more about selling and marketing right this second than anything you'll learn in any school ever.
Thank you. Tell me.
When you give with expectation in return, you lose.
Thank you.
Jab, 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 right hook is give, 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 and too many people interpret it as take. Jab, 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 right hook is give, 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 and then ask. And so that's the cadence, you know, especially when you're asking for something as big time as an internship at Vayner that has become super competitive.
Yeah.
That's when you've got to do your homework of what the value is. It's awesome that you can do a flip, and that would be cool on camera. Feel super selfish is another, I feel like you were gonna win twice. You're gonna do rad ass flip on stage and get an internship. That's not only giving with expectation, that's asking twice. That's why you get a big fat no, Pedro.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, okay, we're gonna go back to a Twitter question. Okay, give us 1 second, okay? Afterwards we'll allow.
Don't hack it. You'll lose two. Next. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, we'll do a Twitter question and then there'll be some opportunity after. Okay, so this one comes from Skeptic, and this is a question I know a lot of people have. What is the future of VR for music artists? And we do have some artists in the crowd here, some actual celebrities, so I'm sure they're all very interested to hear.
VR is the only platform that exists that I know of that has the potential to arbitrage out the internet itself, right? So like if you really think about it, if you super VR'd out.
He's a VR guy, yeah, definitely.
Well, he's right. But here's where some of the VR friends that I have aren't as happy with me. I just think it's a good 15 to 25 years away because it's massive consumer behavior. It reminds me so much of the internet 92, right? We're still in 2017, right? We're talking about 25 years later and still only 30%, 15% of stuff is bought online. But when you think about what VR actually is, which is you put contact, you know, at scale, you put contact lenses in your eyes and you live. You live. You're just living. And it's really no different than the way you're living through your phone right now. Think about how much you go to your phone and how much you watch other people go to their phone. We're living already in VR. It's called this. It gets crazy different when you put it over your eyes and it all feels that way. And so the stuff I've been playing with is so intense. The first time I took off a very substantially strong, ahead of its time VR set a year or so ago, I'll never forget what I said, which really caught me off guard because it was just a very natural reaction. I took it off, it was super HD, the audio, because sound is a big issue, was on point. It's the kids that were doing it reminded me much more of the internet kids that I grew up with, which is straight nerds. You know, not like business guys now that want to be in it because it's cool, right? And I just remember taking off the headset and I said, holy crap, why would anybody ever take this off? And then I was like, then I took a step back and said, oh man, like, huh. So I think what's in it for musicians, the same thing that's in it for everybody. Like production companies are gonna pop up, produce experiences, and it's going to be the same thing we just saw with the internet. Somebody will be the Amazon and somebody will be the YouTube. It's the complete reset of opportunity. Some of the incumbents from the internet age will do a good job. Maybe YouTube does a good job and stays as an entertainment platform. Maybe two kids here create the next YouTube in that environment. But the stakes are very high, and I will tell you a lot of people in this room will be very scared of it because their children will live in a world where they never have to physically move anywhere. And that's gonna change our world. But I do think it's much further away than people think. And so we'll see.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be some VR that helps people move, right? You can run like you're running the Boston Marathon
Chicago. But I think we as humans always like worry about that stuff. Like everyone's talking about exercise and fat, like we're healthier than ever. Just because we're in our phone all the time or play video games all the time, we're not talking about the fact that we eat so much better. We're not talking about that so many people work out every single day now. Like, who's over 40 years old? Raise your hands. Great, good amount. Remember, nobody was healthy 20 years ago. Like nobody, everybody ate Doritos and drank soda, and nobody went to the gym. So we're taking things in micro too much, like, oh, we gotta get people healthier. We're the healthiest we've ever been, and it is not even close. And just because we're in the phone instead of on a television and on Nintendo, doesn't mean we're less healthy.
Totally. Very, very, very true. Okay, let's go back to an audience question. Our mic picker will have the responsibility there.
I owe you. Gary, I got a question
for
you.
What's your name, man?
My name's John. It's not as sexy as Pedro.
No worries. Did you say John?
I did.
Okay, awesome.
I got a question about ambition.
Sure.
You talked about risk as well.
Yes.
So for those of us that dream big, what do you know about running a football team?
Running a football team?
Or owning one, versus having a family. And then how do you equate that over to the idea of this, you know, you talk about this endless ambition and that balance that you're trying to strike. The prioritization there.
Yeah.
I mean, those are two deep, huge engagements, let alone all the other businesses that you have.
Yeah. So hold on to the mic, because maybe we'll clarify here. So I think one of the biggest reasons I don't tell anybody how to parent or how to map their ambition or give relationship advice is we all have different stuff. The serendipity of my life created a scenario where the woman that I married grew up in a household where her father traveled all the time, right? She has the greatest relationship with him. They worked in extremes. He worked a lot and they vacationed a lot and things of that nature. And I grew up in a very similar household where mine was even more extreme. There was no extremes, it was one gear, all working. And we're also a very old school couple. We're a little bit more into dividing and conquering. You know, obviously now we have a whole lot of co-parenting and things of that nature. But, and I don't think one's right or one's wrong. I just know what Lizzie and I are comfortable with. And that's Lizzie and I. And it's very cute and nice that there's lots of books written about what we should do. And it's very nice that you have opinions of how I should do it. But I don't give a shit.
No, but I want you to tell me you struggle with that, maybe.
Do you struggle trying to, okay.
Then I feel even worse.
Let me tell you what I struggle with if you're looking for something. I struggle being completely petrified of anybody that I love dying. Like crippled. Like when my mom goes to the doctor, I can't think for a checkup. That's what I struggle with. After that, feels very controllable. It's binary for me, brother. You know? It's all I've got. You know? Because I'm not scared about my kids not loving me, right? Because I also know there's so many yings and yangs. I know that my daughter is going with me on two speaking engagements in the next year, and that we're gonna, and when I go speak in Anaheim, I'll take the next day off with her, and we'll go through Disneyland and have that time. I don't remember anything about what my parents did with me from 10 to 13, you know, from 6 to 13, other than the one time my mom took me out of school on my birthday in fourth grade and took me to the arcade. People don't understand how memory and the brain works. And by the way, let me remind all the parents that feel great about their work-life balance, coming home and being on your phone and watching TV, and it doesn't mean you're with them. People confuse quality and quantity. So, you know, but let me tell you something. Things change, man. You know, like, I don't, like, with all the audacity that I just delivered this with, I could walk into my home 7 months from now and Lizzie could look me in the face and says, I'm done with this. Too much. And then I got a real problem. Because then I have to decide between two things I can't breathe without, you know? And so I get it. I don't sit here thinking I've got it all figured out. And then life's got twists and turns. Everything's great until your child is diagnosed with a life-threatening disease. I promise you this, if I ever shut my mouth, it's only gonna be because of the health of my family. If you ever don't see me again, that's what I'm doing. And I'll be back when that's resolved. But I'm not stressed by most of the stuff in the middle, especially in the current political correctness POVs of what we should be doing. Cool.
Awesome. So Gary, just keeping on that note, how important do you think it is to build like a really core team around you, people that really support you and understand the hustle?
Imperative, but I think the biggest core team you need to create is within your own brain.
Can you explain that a little further?
If you're not your biggest fan, you've lost.
Amazing. We're going back to Twitter for another question.
And you know what? Let's stay on that for a minute.
Sure.
It's the big one. It's the big one. I think I give so much because I actually think I feel guilty that I was not only gifted with the right DNA, but I was parented so perfectly that I could give you that answer, because I know almost every other person I know doesn't have that feeling about themselves, and a whole lot of it had to do with their mother or their dad or where they grew up. So I feel enormous pain towards people like my father, like a lot of my best friends, who weren't gifted with the infrastructure of the household that made them feel good about themselves, but in return, because their parents were insecure and sad inside, they took it out on their children and pointed out their flaws, because misery loves company. But I implore you, if you're sitting with that in this audience, that you need to figure out, whether it's through therapy, whether it's through something else, you've got to get that poison out of your body, because if you don't, you're not going anywhere.
That actually leads perfect into our next question, and that comes from Stephen Gordon. I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but it says, every speaker has preached positivity, and along those lines, pretty much everyone out there, they want to know, is that the final key to unlocking success? And anyone who follows Gary, which I'm sure that's pretty much everyone in here, we've heard you talk a lot lately about gratitude and becoming a real person.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, what are we doing here? Like, of course. Like, it's so easy, and I've been talking about this more, and I think with the political climate in the States and other places in the world, it's easy to sell negativity. It's easy to be cynical. You're protecting your feelings. You don't want to be tricked. It's hard to sell positivity. People are poking at that always. It feels better. It's tough to see it when you don't have it. I'm empathetic to that. But sure, I mean, you know, I talk a lot in business context, but whether you're a parent or in government, like, what do you want to do? Like, why else would you, like, go through life not trying to achieve happiness? And so, yeah, I think, of course, that's the ultimate goal. And it's incredible what happens when you feel good. Like, everything's easy to deal with, John, you know? Everything's easy to deal with because it's just life. It's real. You know, like, I don't think... I think people dwell. I think dwelling is the wrong strategy.
It's focusing on the wrong things, right? You gotta focus.
Let me tell you who's willing to listen to you to complain. The people that are willing to listen to you complain and dwell consistently only look two parts. They're your most inner family and they love you to the ends of the earth, or they're fellow loser friends.
Okay, awesome. Let's go over to, let's give some love to the sides over here. Let's get a audience question. over here somewhere?
She's a righty. Hey.
Hi, Gary. I know you tell us in your videos, go in all in on your strengths, all chips in on
yes.
your strengths, don't focus on your weaknesses. What have you seen, though, from students at VaynerMedia, students with internships? What are their weaknesses or what's missing from those students and from those people that are asking for that experience from you? Not so that I can work on it, but just so that I know what people like you value and what you need.
I think everybody has different strengths and weaknesses. I break things up into black and white and gray, EQ and IQ. I think those are the two pillars that I kind of look at when I look at somebody. And some people have hard skills out their ass, right? They can do everything, but they don't know how to interact with the other boys and girls, and that ultimately tumbles them, right? Then, so the reason I started talking about something called the honey empire is that's what I want everybody at Vayner to know. In the beginning, I valued honey more. That's why I call it honey empire. So if you were a good person and you could get along with everybody else, you worked at Vayner for quite a while, because that was what I valued. We're now seven, we're now bigger. You know, if you've raised a child, you know things change. You expect more as they get older. And so I expect more of the organization. So we went through a tough patch over the last 6 months where I had to let go of certain people because I deemed that they didn't have the hard skills, the actual intellect, the actual ability, the output, crossing T's, dotting I's, black and white stuff, the math skills, the email copy skills to have a client, you know, the strategy skills to come up with an idea that mattered. And it was very shocking to our company, and a lot of feelings got hurt, but it's the right thing to do because meritocracy matters. If you don't do that, the winning players leave. And so I think most people fall in one of two categories. They're short in one of the two, and if they have both, they'll go on to win. And if they have neither, they're in really deep shit.
Yeah, ultimately you need both, but I feel like a lot of businesses say, oh, it's all about the personality, it's all about the EQ, it's all about those things. Obviously you say you're a D and an F student, you're able to build your own empire, but showing up somewhere and saying you have no skills, but you have lots of EQ, not gonna get you
businesses
very far.
Don't hire on that.
Exactly.
Nobody hires on that. That's why my businesses grow so fast. I actually do hire on that at first, so it creates a cultural foundation that allows me to then do my thing, but no business does that. Like, this many businesses do that. They only hire on skills, they only hire on resume. They don't do what I do when Alex DeSimone's Uber driver's like, I want a job, we're like, okay, you know? If Pedro offered me some Jets memorabilia, he'd have a job too. So I think that, yeah.
I'll be sure to find you some Jets memorabilia.
I think you have to reverse engineer the person that you're selling to, right? I think that people that know me should speak to their EQ qualities because they know I over-index on that. But you shouldn't be mad at a company that clearly points to the fact that they hire on skill and IQ. They want you to have a piece of paper from a bullcrap university that says you can do this thing, and don't be mad at them. That's what they want. And yes, you know, it's not any, you know, I think you're very clear-minded, but I don't feel bad for people who are like, but they said, it doesn't matter. It's up to you to dissect and decode what people say. Everything on you. Everything's your fault. You want to really win in life? You want to get real happy? You know why I'm really happy? Because I think everything's my fault. If I don't like it, I can change. President of the United States, I don't like it, I can move. Like, what's everybody's problem? Adjust. I mean that, meaning I don't have to agree with his politics, I'm just saying that you're in charge, and we are just not historically contextualized. I'm much happier to deal through, you know, political toughness or economic downturn, much cooler to deal with than the Black Plague. No, really, I mean, like, somebody dealt with the Black Plague. Like, you have relatives that died from the Plague. I mean, I know it's funny, but it's true. And like, you know, so I mean, I don't know. I just don't know how to complain. I always think somebody has it worse. And if somebody has it worse, you need to shut up. Whoever is the 7.7, if that's the number we're at, whoever's in last place, whoever that person is, if there was a world chart ranking and Sally was dead last, she can talk.
Okay, awesome. Everyone that has my phone number, I appreciate you calling me and texting me, trying to get a question to Gary right now. Unfortunately, I can't answer your phone call. I'm sorry. We're gonna keep going.
Can we do some more?
Of course.
I know we're doing a wine tasting, but can I sneak in a couple more questions? Yeah, okay, awesome. Let's keep going. Let's go to the left side.
Hold on, come right over here then. You have the mic, so.
I don't know if it's, okay, it is working now. Okay, I apologize. My name's Amy, but I've only seen two of your videos. I know everyone else here pretty much knows you.
Watch this. How many people have never seen any of my stuff? Raise your hands.
Oh my God, way more than I thought. Okay.
One thing that's been great about this talk is it allowed, one more time, raise your hands. One thing that's really great is that I always know that to be true.
Okay.
You know what's amazing about having a huge ego? When you balance it with enormous humility.
It is.
I think 99.9% of the world doesn't know who I am. Those hands shock some people, not me. That was actually better than I thought. I'll take it.
That's awesome. You know? Well, a lot of my friends, like I've got a lot of really high profile friends.
Yep.
And they love you. They watch you all the time.
Yeah, because I'm great.
When you came up and spoke, you kind of scared me and excited me all at the same time. You challenged everything that I thought and called me on my crap.
Yep.
Right? And I've struggled with this thing about how I give from the heart, give, and I'm about to do the jab, but at the same time, there's something in me that tells me that, well, it's not very good to do, like, it.
Keep talking. I'm here.
Okay, I'm coming
You're scared
my
for core. The ask? Well, let's start with something.
Yeah, I am.
Do you believe in what you're selling?
Oh my God, I believe more than anything.
Well then,
I'm out to change the world, and I know I will.
Okay, so what are you asking for?
I wasn't actually coming to ask about that. I I'm looking for, I have habits that are not necessarily the best. I spend my money on education and business, but I overspend. I've put all my stuff into my own thing, but I'm looking for somebody to invest, but also give me the, and I'm not necessarily asking you.
I could tell.
I'm just, okay. But what I'm looking for is somebody who can guide me through the process and saying, well, that's not a very smart business decision.
What are you looking to sell?
Oh, I sell affirming arts. So it's personal development and creative arts combined. And
you're selling people your time and service to make them better?
Yes.
Okay.
And products and services to make them better.
Yep.
Yes.
And so you aren't a good salesperson?
Not yet.
Okay.
I do
Will
sell.
Will you ever be?
Oh God, yeah.
Why?
Because I want to.
That's not good enough.
Because I go out and do it. I don't watch your videos because I'm actually like learning, taking training. I've just recently created the products. Now I'm finding out where to put them all. My marketing, I do want to empower the world, so I'm doing a World Empowerment Now movement.
Yep.
Planning to go for a Guinness Book of World Records.
But you need a partner.
I have a partner, but I don't have a financial partner. I have somebody who's working with me, but I've been paying.
You need an accountant?
No, I need somebody to invest.
You need money.
I need money. I need capital.
Why?
Just to keep her on long enough for us to go through and do this.
So, how much money do you need?
Not even 50,000.
Is that a dollar?
Dollars.
Yes. So I don't know. I think.
And I wasn't even intending to say this. This is
just.
No worries. I just had this insight that I had to have a conversation with you.
I'm glad. Look, I think you have to sell somebody to give you money.
Okay.
So you should go do that.
All right. I am researching angel investors. Are there any angel investors in this group? Not one? All right.
Oh, there's people with money. There's just people that didn't like your pitch.
Okay. That's true.
So what's important, and I'm not saying that to razz you, what's important is to figure out how to define it so that there are people that do want to raise their hand and do want to do that. And more importantly, I would tell you it's really easy to get to people. So here's what I would do if I were you. I would put together your deck, how you explain it. Maybe it's a video because you articulate well. However you want to communicate it.
Okay.
And that would relentlessly ask.
Okay.
Through,
I will make
through
a
LinkedIn
video
emailing,
and I will relentlessly
through, you know,
ask.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do.
Great.
Good
thank
luck.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Let's go back here somewhere and get a little love to this area. Left side.
Perfect. Check. Oh, okay. So my name is Amir, and I actually worked for the co-founders of Elite Daily, so I'm sure you're
awesome, man. Yeah, congrats.
Out in New York.
Yep.
So my question is, I know you're kind of showcasing that you're working really hard and through social media, Instagram, Snapchat, that you're outworking everyone.
Yes.
But what's the end goal? Like, why are you doing the 60-second club or the 5-minute club? Where do you see that in 1 year? Is that some sort of like a proof of concept with your clients?
I'm always testing. Like everything I do is always learning behavior, right? To me, it was when I decided that Instagram was disproportionately getting the attention, I wanted to understand what was the right cadence to create notification turn on, and how do I bring value in return for it, and what's the right value prop of returning it. And then I saw that a lot of people were posting, but was that bringing value to the community, which is why I shifted it to 5-minute club. And then I realized like neither was really bringing value, but the 60-second club brought a sense of urgency and fun to people, like tens of thousands of them. So I said, let's switch it back. Those are just micro tactics in me learning things that could eventually help clients, could help Wine Library. And just, I'm an entrepreneur, right? So the end goal is to be on the journey of entrepreneurship. I'm a risk taker. I like doing different things. I don't like settling for the same old thing. And so those are just tactics of trying to learn different platforms and capabilities and trying to understand the learnings from the behavior of people reacting to it.
There's no really end goal. Like, is there an end goal that in 1 year through this, through these channels?
No, I have zero micro end goals like that. Zero. I never, ever, ever think, I've never said that in 1 year, you know, I don't have that goal. I have one macro goal, which is to feel like I left it on the field, is probably the best way I could put it. I just, you know, I'm sure all of us have different versions of this. I just have this feeling, you know, it's like moth to the light, right? I couldn't even really explain it. It's why I'm so comfortable in it, because it's been there long before this. 20 years before the internet, it was there. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just always been there. I don't know why every single weekend, instead of playing with my friends, I wanted to make my friends work with me and wash cars. I mean, my poor friends that are now coming out of the woodworks, I forgot how many of them I made do things. I don't talk about the shoveling snow and the car wash business and the miniature golf course I built in my friend's backyard. Like, you know, I don't talk about those things often, but it's, you know, it's just who I am. It's you know, the same way people need to sing, or the same way people like need to cook every night. You just need to cook. Like, you don't even, you can't, you know? I just need to business.
Do you think that kind of, you know, sends a message to your audience that, you know, for them to do the same, you see, you know, you're following, you know, posting their Snapchat of I'm working. Do you think that kind of might create some deceit, like deceive their audience that it's actual fake work than real work? Because, like, yeah, my ideology is, I don't need to Snapchat, yeah. I don't need to Instagram to show that I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm working when I'm not on there. So yeah. I feel like there's more wannabepreneurs that are actually doing that to say,
of course,
like,
of course. I think for me, I have the right balance of wanting to give back and a lot of selfishness to have the attention, and it works in my favor because I feel good about both. I love the attention, and like I have that narcissistic DNA, and I love it. I love taking selfies. I love that people want to stay. I love people. Of course I would love it. It feels nice. My mom loved me so much and complimented me every day so much that when I left the house, I was like, fuck this, I need more of that. So I need that, that's why I do it. I'm also not scared. A lot of my friends who don't put themselves out there, they don't want themselves out there because there's things that they don't want people to uncover about them. So I'm not scared, that happens. And it feels really good getting 100 emails a day from people whose lives are way better because they stumbled on some of your videos. And that's something that my quiet friends who don't need that, who just need to build and do their business, they don't have that feeling. So when my friends who tell me, my God, if you put this energy into your full-time, like if people knew, like my friends will say things like, if people knew that Gary Vee was your side hustle, like if people knew like how much you're actually still, if you actually took all that time and energy and put into your business, you wouldn't be doing 100 million, you'd be doing 200 million. And I always reply with the same thing. I'm like, yeah, but my legacy's way better than yours. You know, and so you probably know this after the exit of your business. It's crazy what, like money after a while, just like, I don't know, like how much do you need? Like what, like, I don't know, like I don't buy shit. Like I don't need stuff.
It didn't like, change anything. Yeah, the co-founders' lives stay the same.
So. Yeah, so like you know how it is. Like everybody, and by the way, I'm pumped for people who their whole life wanted a Lamborghini and worked hard and got one. Good for them. Like I don't judge other people's stuff, and I definitely don't care how I'm being judged. Cool.
Amazing, amazing. And when you get to a certain level, you get people wearing shirts with your face on it. I see Gary's face over here on a t-shirt.
I mean, you want to talk about narcissistic.
GaryVShop.com, people, check it out. Shirts like this. We're going to do one final question. I'm so sorry that we have to wrap this up. We have a final question over here somewhere. Yeah? Okay, I think they're going to come on stage to ask you the question, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 give it up for Gary Vee. Hello, James Ert here.
How are you?
Chair of the board for Reviver Ranch for At-Risk Kids.
How are you?
Very good, very good grateful. So I'm coming here with a pure attitude of gratitude to thank you and your organization. We have an original $15,000 splatchy couture made out of automotive paint from a 911 from the different layers. We can explain it later. It comes with a certificate of authenticity, and we just wanted to offer it to you as a thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. It's good to see you. How you been?
Good. I'm a theater performer. There we are. Gary, thank you so much. How about it, Gary Vee, everybody? Now, we're not quite done with you yet. You know that because you mentioned it earlier. You couldn't wait to get to this part because of the amazing success that all got launched through wine and spirits. We have Richard Slingerland is going to join us on stage right now from Pilateri Estates Winery. And I say we have ourselves a wine test.
All right. How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right, so I'm very happy to be here today. Everyone can hear me okay?
Yep.
All right, awesome. So I'm really excited because I'm a Pilateri family member for Pilateri Estates Winery, Niagara and Lake. My job is a very difficult job. I get to taste wine with people for a living. The Niagara wine region, I know a lot of you have been to our winery or around here. It's really been incredible how much it's grown over the last 20, 30 years. It's hard to believe when our winery opened, there was only 16 wineries in Ontario. Now there's over 220. As well, I've mentioned to a few people before, we're actually the second most traveled wine route in the world, only second to Napa Valley, California. So the tourism that we get is incredible, but we're still trying to promote our wines worldwide and to make a real name for ourselves. So I thought it'd be really fun to try some wines together.
Thrilled to do it.
Yeah. And I imagine you still drink wine from time to time?
Once in a blue moon.
Okay.
Cool.
So we have a few wines here from Pilateri Winery, of course, my family business. And we're going to also do some sparkling wine from Jackson Triggs. Now, I wanted to just jump right into a big, juicy red. For our winery, we're very proud of every wine that we make. But when we're tasting wine together today, what I really want to do is just see if you can notice some difference in characteristics and if you can really pick out maybe what grape this is, for example. What a fun game I get to play.
Let's
guess which grape this is with Gary Vee.
All right, let's see.
So, single varietal.
Okay. So on the sniffy sniff, as I used to call it, there's a little hint of blackberry. Okay. There's a little charcoal kind of actual aspect to it. Yeah. I'm getting a little vegetal on the nose, so let's give it a whirl. It's pretty good.
Thank you.
I was really looking, I was pumped. I'm like, I'm gonna destroy his wine in his face. But it's pretty good, very clean. Nice tannins on the, you know, really sweet tannins, which I'm sure makes, you know, how many people drink wine? Great, so the one big thing with red wines, the reason it takes people time to get used to it is that bitter taste on the back end, the skins from the grape, the tannins. This has like Cabernet Franc-like characteristics.
That's 100%. It's 100% Cabernet Franc. It's the...
Guys, long before I was cool in the business world, I was cool in the wine world. I've got other talents. So, nice. Yeah, so, it feels like a really strong Cab Franc.
Yeah,
and I'm a big Loire... So I love Loire Valley Reds, which are Cabernet Franc-based. They're more vegetal than this is. This is a little more fruit, but the reason I was able to kind of distinct the varietal was because the California Cabernet Franc craze has more sunshine to it. I was a little confused because the weather patterns here, so it just speaks to the quality of the grapes, which I think is a great indication of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, thank you. So Cabernet Franc, for those of you guys who didn't know, is actually one of the most widely planted grapes here in Ontario because it ripens so well. It ripens about end of October, mid-October. And for us, this is a 2012 reserve. We do 24 months in French oak barrels. And it's our premium red wine that we've been showcasing all around the world. So obviously when I'm going, you know, China, Japan, Germany, we export a third of our products overseas, which is pretty amazing. 35 different countries in total. Cabernet Franc has always been our number one red, so I'm glad you picked it out and you really enjoyed it. In terms of the next wine we have, this is a sparkling wine from Jackson Triggs.
While you open that, let me just say one thing while we're wine nerding it out. Here is the, I was starting to pen the book in my head, which is how I do it. I was gonna come out with the wine diet, which was gonna talk about how I basically watched anybody who came from being somewhat into wine and interested in wine to really getting to a place where they loved it and enjoyed it quite a bit. And the whole concept was predicated on the fact of the matter is, again, how many people here drink wine multiple times a week? Raise your hands, just to get a sense. Here's the thing, bunch of alcoholics around here. The big thing that happens in wine is people find a wine they like, either a brand or a type, and they drink it for the rest of their lives. They drink, whether it's Cabernet Franc, or whether it's Jackson Triggs, or whether it's Chardonnay, or they just drink it forever. And so the wine diet was gonna be forcing people to drink 365 different types of wine in 1 year. If you're genuinely getting into wine or wanna get more into it, the number one way to really become someone who can really appreciate it is to force yourself to try different wines from different regions. So a Cabernet Sauvignon from California is gonna act differently than one from Australia, and then trying grape varietals like Petit Verdot or Chenin Blanc or a Malbec from Cahors is gonna be different than Argentina. If you really wanna get there, that's the way to do it.
All right.
Cool.
So sparkling wine is what we're gonna jump to next, and everyone loves sparkling wine. It's one of those easy wines I find a lot of
people. Who here doesn't like sparkling wine or champagne? Raise your hands. Not everybody.
That's okay. I didn't make this one, so it's okay, yeah.
Good news, way more people had no idea who the hell I was. it's pretty good too.
So
I remember 7-10 years ago,
yeah.
I was really passionate about Canadian wines. Okanagan here to really get them more into the US. A lot wasn't coming in. And Jackson Triggs really caught my attention, you know, 12, 13 years ago, producing really high quality wines. It's good to see they're continuing that process.
Yeah, they've been a real flagship winery in the region. There's a few of us that have been around for that 20 plus years. And it's nice because we all carry that weight together. And Jackson Triggs being one of those big boys, they produce a very consistent, very well-rounded wine every time. And you can just see the bubble jumping through this glass. I mean, the great part, I know I'm talking about these wines, we're drinking them now, but we are gonna have them for tasting outside with lunch. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hey!
And as we move forward, the very last wine we're gonna pour, coming from a family business at Pilateri, my grandmother and grandfather, they're at the winery every day. You talk about your experience growing up, and in terms of the wine industry, it really is that story and that connection that people have that makes them remember things. And the neat part about coming to our winery is that my grandmother is the number one salesman for this ice wine right here. So
that's awesome.
So 74 years old, in there every day, and she just loves explaining to people about this ice wine they've never heard of before, because we get visitors that come to Niagara Falls, Toronto, from all over the world, and they are told that you're gonna taste the world's rarest wine. And I know a lot of people might say, oh, this is special, this is unique. Ice wine can only be made in a very special small climate, which we have here in Niagara. And ice wine is just magical. You swirl it in the glass. If there's any aromas jumping out.
I'm about to tell a story I haven't told in a long time. When I was single in New York City, ice wine was a very big part of my dating strategy. Because it's so delicious, you like can drink that whole little bottle and, you know, for, you know, stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's so, if, who likes sugar? Raise your hands. I mean, this stuff is so good.
Yeah.
And when you compare it to the great Sauternes of the world that tend to be 4 to 50 times more expensive for 98% of the drinking public, they're not gonna taste the nuanced differences that separate it, and that speaks to the quality of these wines. And what's really crazy about these wines, a lot of youngsters, here's what I would say, the thing I find most fascinating about these ice wines is they will age literally for 30, 40, 60 years. And they're priced in a way that, so a lot of my friends who are now 40 years old are super thankful for me because I pushed them on, and including yours,
thank you.
Ice wine, which now they have, they bought when they were 25, they're 15 years old, they're really interesting wines, they're gonna last longer, and I told them to buy a case and pour it at their daughter's wedding or their kid's wedding. So I always think like, you know, back to like living your life, the moments, me in the arcade, John, you know, like that stuff, like to me, that's what I loved about wine, which is it's really cool that, and there's a lot of youngsters in here, that you can go and buy 6 bottles of something like this, put it away somewhere that it can store, and really open it 40 or 50 years later and be like, that Gary Vee guy who's like the number one human on earth, he told me, he was the one who told me to buy this. No, but it will last forever.
Yeah, and it's really fun. I mean, the Niagara wine industry has so many different wines, you know, so many different styles, whether it's Baco Noir, Cabernet Franc, or ice wine. But there's no question, ice wine's what's kind of built up our whole industry 100%. Here. When people think of Canada, the first thing that kind of pops in their head is ice wine. And we're very lucky, like I said, we actually ship this to 35 different countries. It's crazy if you see it around the world sometimes. Catches you off guard if you're on vacation. You know, you go to Las Vegas, and obviously things are more expensive in Las Vegas, but you see the bottle, which is, you know, $50, $60 here.
Las Vegas is another good place to bring ice wine.
Yeah. It's more expensive, right?
So congratulations.
Thanks so much
yeah,
for everything.
Thank you for
and
letting
it's
me
just
taste
fun tasting wines.
Ton.
Glad you've heard of Niagara and Pelletieri.
And know it super well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Richard Slingerland, Pelletieri Estates. Thank you so much. We have one more guest up here to see you for a quick sec. First, before I do that, I have a bit of housekeeping here. Just one quick thing. There is a red F-150, Ford F-150. Its license plate is AK48326.
This is not real.
No, it's real.
Okay.
It's parked illegally, and it's going to be towed, but I think that this happened an hour ago. So you might be running after your car. So once again, Ford F-150, AK48326, enough.
This is the best conference I've ever
been
to.
Can you imagine? Okay, my next order of business.
Yes.
If people could please take out their bingo cards. I'm totally kidding. No, I was just joking. All right, I want to bring another guest out. He's got a gift for you. He was running back for 10 years with the Edmonton Eskimos.
Amazing.
Of the Canadian Football League. Five-time Grey Cup champion. He's also, of course, because of those accolades, a member of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. He's the athletic director right now at Brock University. There he goes,
yeah.
Coach. He was with his daughter Kristen on Amazing Race and his son Jesse Lumsden after a successful yet short career in the CFL is now representing Canada 2018 for his second Olympic game. This is Neil Lumsden.
Is this on? Can everyone hear me?
You're on.
Just security knows that's my truck. Don't touch my truck, whoever it is.
How are you?
Great to meet
Such
you.
Such a pleasure.
Great day. That's
Whoa,
my pleasure.
Jesus, some serious guns under here.
Yeah, well, curls get girls. listen, I was asked to, and clearly it doesn't work for those that are paying attention. I'm today's bag man, but more importantly, thank you for a lot of the things you talked about and a lot of things you said. They resonate not only with me, with everyone else. It also reminds me how lucky I've been. And one thing that really, it all resonated, but one of the things that really resonated when you talked about a firefighter and firefighters and that attitude, I've had the good fortune from university to whatever time it is right now to be around people that always ran in, didn't run out. And that's one of the reasons I think I've had a lot of fun in life. So thanks for reminding me.
Yeah,
but more importantly, on a football front,
yes,
the Super Bowl's over.
Yes, thank God.
but our national championship, the Grey Cup game, was played in November. And I was involved in a few of them, all successful, I'm pleased to say. And as you probably know, for national championships, they make so many footballs that are branded for the Grey Cup.
Yes.
So I thought it's appropriate that, given that you're a football fan, that we would get you one of the few branded balls from this year's Grey Cup, signed by our commissioner.
That's amazing.
And I threw my signature on there as well.
I appreciate that.
And Pedro, if you come up and do a couple of flips, you don't get one either. Not impressive enough, buddy. Not impressive enough.
He was ready, though. I like that speed, Pedro.
Yeah, but you're right. It's not good enough.
Well, thank you.
So on behalf of myself, Brock University, athletes,
thank you. That's a real honor. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Okay. Very nice.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Fantastic. Gary, thank you very much for your time, pal.
Do I have to go?
You are ready to go if you need to.
I'll take three selfies. Let's go. All right. Episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is I Love This Podcast by Leah. I love listening to this podcast during work to motivate me to be the great entrepreneur that I know I could be. Thanks, Gary. Thanks to Leah. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.